Okay, I'm going to call the state senate Senate State Affairs Committee to order. It's just a little bit past 3:30. Today's Tuesday, and February 13th, and with us today is Senator Giesel, Senator Coghill, Senator Wilson, and Senator Egan. Also joining us will be my staff, Christine Marsigan, and we have for Senate Records, Christopher Dickrow, and the LIO staff behind me is Max Stanley. So we have everybody here today. We only have one item on the budget, on the docket, and that is Senate Bill 141, biannual budget. So, Ms. Pitney, if you'd like to join us, please. Let's see, we've got Guy Bell is going to join us. Great. Before we get started, is there anything that the committee wants to bring up before we get started on today's bill? Okay, if not, then before us, as I said, is the Senate Bill 141 that deals with the biannual budget. This is governor's bill, and presenting the bill will be our OMB director, Pat Pitney. Pat, the floor is yours.
For the record, my name is Pat Pitney. I'm director of Office of Management and Budget, and thank you for the opportunity to present on this bill. After watching the last several years and the turmoil of the late budget, and also after examining some solutions to that, we came up with the impetus for this bill, and we also wanted to assure that we don't go through the exercises that we've gone through for the last 3 years at the year end that is very disruptive and creates uncertainty not just for state employees but for the fishing industry and the processors and tourists trying to get on the ferry. All of that created more uncertainty than our already economic uncertainty. With me to present this bill is Guy Bell, who's worked in helping draft it. We also have in the audience available for questions Bill Milks from the Department of Law, who can talk to any specific language questions in the bill. As part of the materials, we provided a sectional analysis. Also, we've invited Deputy Director Fred Parody. Fred has a unique experience. He was a Speaker of the House in the Wyoming legislature, and Wyoming has used the biennial process. And he can talk about his experience in the legislature with that. And so if you have questions for Commissioner or Deputy Commissioner Parody, that is excellent. We've also included in our packet information from Tom Keene from Ohio, Ohio has used the biennial process for a significantly long period of time. He believes strongly in it, as well as, so that information is available. He is available to talk individually. He's also available to testify at a later date if you choose to. Another gentleman that we've worked with is John Hicks. He's the head of the NASBO, National Association of State Budget Officers. But he worked in Kentucky for over 20 years as the director of budget, and they also are on a biennial budget process, and all of them can talk about their experiences. So a lot of resources available on the biennial process, and with that, I'm going to turn it over to Guy to talk about the provisions in SB 141.
Before we go into the bill itself, is there any questions for the director? Senator Giesel? I have a question for Ms. Pitney. You gave some references of other states that go on to biannual budgeting, and I would tend to agree that would be a more efficient way to go and a better way to go. But unfortunately, in Alaska, as you know, we're so tied to one commodity as for our main source of revenue, and that commodity is very volatile, goes up and down. So that's why it just seems like it would be really hard, if not even impossible, to go every 2 years on a budget. And if we did, it just seems to me that we'd have a huge supplemental, which even now, after 1 year, you know, we have a big supplemental budget. So has that thought crossed your mind, the fact that Alaska, unlike these other states, are so tied to one source of revenue? Now, I know you might suggest maybe we should have other sources of revenue, but that's for finance.
Yes, Senator Meyer, as you know, our plan includes a much more stable revenue picture. It is best for this process to run under a stable revenue picture. As you know, our revenue picture is the most volatile of any state by an order of magnitude, like seven times. This assumes a more stable revenue picture, that there is some component of a fiscal plan put forward, but it also recognizes that even in this fiscal strife, that the operating budget, 80% of it doesn't move year to year. And in some cases, 90 or 95% doesn't move in a given year. And you can create that certainty in the first year of the legislature that extends into the second year. We absolutely believe there would be a second adjustment bill, whether you call it a supplemental or an amendments bill, in the second session of each legislature. This wouldn't avoid a supplemental. It wouldn't negate it. It would create certainty for probably 90% of the budget items that are examined every year. I think a bigger piece is it separates the budget discussion and allows more time for policy discussion. And I think that is an advantage that shouldn't be undervalued.
Okay. Any other questions? See none, then. Guy? Mr. Bell?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. Guy Bell, Policy Specialist, Office of the Governor. Pat pretty much gave my whole presentation. So, but anyway, I'll give it a shot. I just have a few slides to present. There are two components to this legislation, and the slide number two presents them. This is from the governor's 2018 State of the State Address. And again, two components. The first is to shift Alaska from an annual to a biennial budget process. The second component of this legislation is to set budget completion deadlines and to set financial consequences in the event that those deadlines are not met. And I'll go into each of these in some detail. This bill has 35 sections, but really only five of those sections are really substantive in nature. The remaining 30 sections, are conforming in nature. So really, this presentation is going to focus on just five sections of 35. Next slide. The first piece is the biennial budget proposal. And this proposal would make changes to the Executive Budget Act, which is in Title 37. Section 17 of the bill would apply to the legislature, and Section 18 to the governor. And under the proposal, the governor would be required to submit and the legislature approve two sets of appropriation bills, one for the first fiscal year of a biennium and the second for the second fiscal year of the biennium. So there would be two sets of appropriation bills still, but they would all be enacted in the first session of a legislature. The second session then would be devoted to policy and agency oversight matters or other legislative activities. But as Pat said, there would also be the need to look at amendments for the second year of the biennium.
Mr. Chair? Yeah, we have a question here. Senator Wilson.
Yes, thank you. So with the second year of appropriations, and I think the members' packets was the NCSL document from Ronald Snell, and on that page 8 and during the conclusion talked about some of the supplemental process with that. where it talks about forecasting is likely to produce more accurate and annual budgets and biannual, but possibly reducing the need for supplemental appropriations and special legislative sessions. So with that knowledge that our supplementals would be smaller at annual and annual, and our, I think this past year we had a $200 million supplemental that came through. Do you expect that number to be higher and more an increased number for potential supplemental, knowing that that was just a 1 year, so we're looking at a $400 million supplemental that could be introduced in a biannual budget?
So through the chair, Senator Wilson, there are many factors that impact a supplemental. My very first year down here, we had a buyout for the Trans-Canada Partnership. That was a fairly large special session and a supplemental in that same component. There will be different reasons for supplementals. Some of it might be because there is a revenue issue. The reality is we have managed our finances that even in a deficit situation, we're using our savings to cover that deficit. Because we're a revenue volatile state, we already anticipate that our forecasts are going to be wrong. I don't think that each of you, except for Senator Wilson, you and myself, these other fine senators have all been here, and I bet as long as they've been here, we haven't gotten the oil forecast right 1 year. Some years were very, very high, and some years were very low. In our volatility, that is going to remain, and supplementals will remain, and they're not going to be impact whether it's 1 year or 2 years. But would there be a 400 supplemental? It's very possible. Could there be a supplemental that goes a different direction because we actually changed the direction of a particular program? That's possible as well.
Go ahead, Senator Wilson.
No, I'll follow up on another slide.
Okay. Yeah, and Mr. Bell, if you could put your affiliation on the record as well. I didn't catch that.
I'm an employee of the Office of the Governor.
Okay. Used to be in Department of Labor for a long time.
That's right, and a few other agencies as well over the years. Yeah.
Okay, so Mr. Bell's been around a while. Okay, very good. Any other questions? Seeing none, then I'll go ahead and proceed.
So on to what we see as the benefits of the biennial budget process. And as Pat mentioned, Tim Keene, the director of State of Ohio OMB, was very kind to send us a letter with his observations about the benefits of biennial budgeting from the State of Ohio's perspective. And is very similar to what we found when we did our own research in advance of presenting this proposal. And there are basically four broad benefits presented by Mr. Keene. The first is that we would have a longer planning horizon, shifting from 1 to 2 years. So initiatives could be ramped up or ramped down by virtue of that additional planning process. The second is more of a benefit to the general public in the form of greater predictability, whether it's school district funding levels, marine highway schedules, hopefully fewer no pink slips to state employees so that fish and game openings and closures can be predictable, those types of benefits. For state agencies, they can shift their energy from what I think of as the grind of producing the budget year after year after year to doing that every other year, to then focusing their energy on fiscal improvements, financial management, and improving public service. For the legislature, we see benefits as well, because, again, rather than that year-to-year grind of the budget process, the first year would be very heavily concentrated, first session of a legislature would be very heavily concentrated on budget, but then the second session could focus on agency oversight or other policy matters. So we see benefits accruing to the public, to state government, and to the legislature by virtue of this.
So, Mr. Bell, if I may interrupt you, well, I guess your next slide shows how many states actually have a
Yes.
Yeah, so 21 of the 50?
Mr. Chairman, yes. Okay. 21 of the 50 states use biennial budgeting. I've listed those 21 states on this slide. This came from the National Conference for State Legislatures from 2011, but I believe it's still accurate. To me, the interesting thing is that they represent small and large states, red and blue states, resource and non-resource states, and then they're quite geographically representative as well.
Okay, but certainly majority are not biennial.
I'm sorry?
A majority of the states are not biennial.
That would mean that the remainder of the states are annual budget states, correct.
Okay, any other questions? All right, go ahead, Mr. Bell.
So now I'm going to move on to the second component of the legislation, which has to do with setting deadlines. And in the legislation, you will see sections 6 and 7 that apply to the legislature and section 20 to the governor. And as proposed, the legislature would be required to pass a budget, both bodies of the legislature would be required to pass the budget, by the deadline, the 90-day deadline set by the public in 2006. If they don't do so, beginning on day 91, the salaries for legislators would be suspended and per diem would be forfeit until a budget is passed. Similar consequences would apply to the governor in the event the executive budget is not presented to the public in the legislature by the December 15th deadline set out in the Executive Budget Act.
Yeah, Senator Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Two questions here. One is the statutory deadline. Would the governor's office be amenable that this was to pass to move that deadline up? You're looking at a two-year budget, probably a little bit more time for legislators to get around to that information. Also, because of the same study, talks about passing a biannual budget, you have legislators that will be less familiar with the budgetarial process. Since they're doing it on a biannual basis, so that's one time for each sitting member in the other body and twice for this body. And so I used to know if you would be amenable to moving that statutory deadline closer.
Through the chair, Senator Wilson, as for the first legislative session of each four-year term, it would be pretty difficult to move that forward given it's a month from roughly a month from election time, but the second biennial cycle, moving that forward, I don't think would be an unrealistic change. But it being that the election is roughly November 7th, sometimes you don't know the results until November 15th, a new governor, and as I was when I came in, a brand new budget director, has a very short turnaround time for that first piece. So I would say this second biennial could certainly have a different deadline, but not the first one would be very difficult.
Okay. Yes, sir.
Go ahead, Senator Wilson.
And the second question has to do with sort of the consequence. You know, being the freshman senator here at this table, seeing how process goes in between this body and the other body passing a budget, it's a lot of moving parts, a lot of we're relying upon our other colleagues in the other body and this body to pass budgets or to get them to the floor in that process. Similarly, the governor would also have a process where he's relying on his department heads and other body members to produce the budget. With the hearing of the same recommendation in the other body from another member, would that also be amenable to add that if we don't get a budget on time from the governor, that his commissioners, deputy commissioners, would also take a loss of pay?
Well, through the chair to Senator Wilson, that could certainly be considered by the legislature, but the Executive Budget Act makes it very much the governor's responsibility to submit the budget. The responsibility really rests on the governor's shoulders. That's just my observation on the executive budget requirement for submitting the budget on time.
Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Wilson. I'll follow up on that a little bit. It doesn't appear to me it's a level playing field, because you all work for the governor. So if he says, I want the budget by December 1st, you're going to do it. Now, unfortunately, we can say that to the House, but they don't have to oblige us, and they typically don't. So that's the dilemma, is that, you know, we can do the budget in 45 days. We've done it in 45 days before, but, you know, getting the other body to agree, and sometimes even the governor intervenes and delays it. So, you know, I guess that's another consideration, is if the governor intervenes and say, hey, I don't like that budget, don't pass it, then why should we suffer the consequences? Yes.
Mr. Chairman, a couple of things. The next two slides somewhat address that, but in terms of what would happen if the governor vetoed, let's just say the governor didn't like the budget and vetoed it. Well, that's the governor's choice. As the bill is written, as long as the budget is passed both bodies, the legislature has done its work. So let's just say the governor vetoed the budget bill. I think the clock at that point would probably stop ticking. So that would be a legal question, but I think that's the intent.
Senator Caulfield?
Yeah, and I'll look constitutionally at this issue. But there was a time when I came to the legislature that the legislature and the governor had such a bad relationship that the governor would not entertain amendments to his budget, and made it difficult for department heads to get information to the legislature, which created no small stir. And just because I've lived through it one time, I could see a potential where the governor could slow roll the legislature to not be able to pass the budget. We would have to pass a budget that may not have good working pieces in it, just to cover our own self and really not do service to Alaska. So I've seen that actually play out, where they said, you figure it out. So
this, through the chair, Senator Coghill, not specific to your question, but the entirety of this bill assumes a discipline, and there's always going to be a legal loop to get through it. But this is a good faith discipline that we're focused on. And so if, you know, there's always a way around, and, you know, you can look at all sorts of events that have happened, but those events aren't always those that where everybody is working in good faith. And that's, we're looking for good faith discipline in introduction of the bill.
Mr. Chairman,
yes.
And I appreciate that. So I am not going to put you in any bad light at all. But the balance of power structure continually needs to be looked at as we move forward. So as we look at this, I don't disrespect the idea of a biennial budget. I don't know that the penalty provisions in here help us get there. I just don't know that. Now, I'll work on it. But since I've seen that kind of action in play, I can see where the balance of power constitutionally could be upset significantly. So I'll sit back and think about it and see if there may be better ways we can do it.
Okay. Thank you, Senator Caulfield. Additional questions? Okay. Mr. Bell, go ahead.
Okay. The next slide is just a little bit of work we've done just looking at the past legislative sessions, just looking in the rearview mirror. And from the 2011 to the 2017 session, the second column indicates the 90th day of the session. The third column, the date the operating budget was passed by both bodies. The fourth column, the difference in days from the 90th day to the passage date. And then the fifth column, the capital budget passage date, and then the last column, the difference in days from the 90th day to the passage date. And you can see in some years, a number of years, the budget by these measures was passed on time. But three of the years, and the two past years in particular, there was significant difference in days.
Senator Wilson.
And that just sort of reiterates Senator Coghill's statements for me. Now, looking at this, is that the past 2 years, 3 years, you may have had a different makeup of different bodies and administration, and what information we may or may not receive from the administration to help make those decisions and differences. Do you feel that may have played a part in the past two years, 3 years?
Through the chair to Senator Wilson, that's possible. I hope I don't sound like a Pollyanna, but I think that by virtue of some of these incentives and the consequences, perhaps that sort of there will be more drive to reach consensus, and that would be the hope, that the drive wouldn't be to penalize; it would be to reach consensus on a budget.
Yeah. And if I could follow up. And I guess the follow-up is on your next slide, on the same sort of line, is that California is not a biannual state, correct? From the other slide, I didn't see that it listed.
Through the chair to Senator Wilson, yes, that's correct.
And so they have a different piece of legislation, and just wondering why the combination of both a consequence and a biannual in the same piece of legislation, instead of trying to get one across versus the other one. I didn't know which one is more adequate, which one's more important of these two concepts.
Through the chair, Senator Wilson, they're two separate concepts in some perspective. They both address the Executive Budget Act. They address two issues. However, they're both important, and they're not mutually exclusive. We believe biennial budgeting is smart from a time and process and attention standpoint, and both from, as Mr. Bell pointed out, from a state agency perspective, a public perspective, and a legislative perspective. So we believe it's smart. The deadline provision is more to address the certainty and the disruption that a late budget causes. So they don't have to come both at the same time. We believe they are both very important.
Thank you.
So, and Mr. Chairman, just on this slide, This is the only situation we're aware of that a state has this type of provision, which is in the state of California. We couldn't find another state that did this. But and there's a typo in this. And this California Proposition 25 was actually passed through a voter initiative in 2010, not 2008. And it is a constitutional amendment in the state of California. And it does require the legislature to pass a budget by a deadline, and in the event that deadline is not met, legislators' pay is forfeit until such a time that the budget is passed. And it has been very effective. Before passage of this initiative, the budget was consistently very late, and ever since, with the exception of just the first year when it was just a few days late, it has been on time. So for the state of California, of course, which is much larger than ours, been a successful effort. And that's it for our presentation, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Bell. Have you ever considered presenting this at the federal level?
Mr. Chairman, Congressman Paul Ryan is a strong advocate of biennial budgeting. And if you go to his website, you'll see quite a bit from him on the benefits of biennial budgeting at the federal level. So there have been some initiatives at the federal level, but nothing has got a lot of traction.
Sure. Does he also support cutting their pay and per diem and all that?
I'll have to check his website, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Yes. Mr. Chairman, the President actually did bring it up as part of the speech. So it was brought up, but I'm sure it wasn't received real well.
Very good. Thank you, Senator Caulkill. Sir, other questions for the sponsor of the bill? Any none? Okay. Thank you very much. Let's see where we're at here. Okay, we'll go to public testimony at this time, if there is any. I don't see anyone online who has signed up to testify. Is there anyone here in Juneau who wants to testify? Nope. Okay. If not, then I will go ahead and close public testimony. So, what's the committee? Any committee thoughts, discussion, questions? This is kind of a big concept to swallow in one meeting, Senator Caudill.
Yeah, I would suggest we don't swallow it in one meeting. There's some legitimate questions to be answered in here. But I would like to look, and I begin looking down both statutorily and constitutionally where I think we can go. No doubt this is constitutional, but there are principles in the Constitution I think that we need to watch, and that is separation of powers and then the balance of powers. So this is my first time really looking at it. The biennial budget may or may not work in Alaska. You're going to have to come up with a mechanism that is reasonable to move the adjustments. There's no doubt about that. And so that would change our dynamics. Mm-hmm. Would that change our outcomes? I don't know. I just don't know. So I certainly wouldn't want to move it until I've had a chance to ponder this a little bit more. That's for sure. Just for me.
Yeah, that's a good point, Senator Caudill. And my staff did a little bit of research, and initially in 1940, there were 44 states that had a biannual budget, and so now there's only 21. So there must be some issues involved with the biannual budget that we're not aware of, or that the other states found were not workable. Other questions? Senator Giesel, any questions? Okay.
I just share Senator Coghill's question of the separation of powers. This, to me, sounds like giving the executive branch pretty dictatorial powers and control over the legislative branch, which is the people's body. So, yes, I would like to look at this a bit further. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Giesel. And Senator Giesel, I share those same concerns. It's obviously much easier for the governor to get a budget done on December 15th. And I think, Senator Wilson, your question was good that, you know, perhaps we could get it by December 1st. Might give us even more time to work on it before session started. But obviously, you know, the budget director works for the governor, and so obviously, she's going to make sure it gets there by December 15th. And unfortunately, the budget chairman or finance chairman on the other body, they don't work for them, so they don't necessarily agree with us when we want to have it done in 45 days or even 90 days. So it's a little bit out of our control. And I think, Senator Giesel, you brought up a good point. We do work for the people. And some of our people maybe don't want the budget as proposed, or even as it goes through the process, and want us to hold out for more reductions or more additions. So sometimes these delays are even for the benefit of the state. And I don't think anyone is here longer than 90 days just to collect a salary or per diem even. So. Yeah, I don't know if that punishment would incentivize us any, because we're here to do our job, as was mentioned. Senator Cockett.
If I could just chime in. You know, I'm not unsympathetic with the department, because the day that the budget is in force is the day they begin building their next budget, you know. So they have to go through from August to October to get themselves corralled up, and then they have to get agreement within their group to present a budget and get it good and actual factual in December. So I'm not unsympathetic with the cycle. It seems like they have to do the budget every cycle. But I just wonder what would change in a biannual, because they would probably still have to come up with modifications every year anyway. And then it's a matter of, do you take a whole look or a partial look? And if it really is 90% of the issues are not going to be rethought, I would find that interesting. And maybe there's some value to that, because I am sympathetic with, we ask them to do policy changes while they're implementing their budget changes almost simultaneously. So there are some real legitimate issues there, and so I'm going to stay open-minded to it. I don't know that we would impose upon ourselves the deadline that they want us to, and the consequence of that deadline, the penalty. But I don't find it unreasonable that an expectation should have some consequence to it. So, but if I was going to do it, I'd put it at the 120-day instead of the 90-day, because that's a hard deadline anyway. And if we miss a hard deadline, but there, then I would think that there would be some consequence to a governor calling us back every time he's dissatisfied with a policy. And so I think I'll have to think about how that dynamic would work, because I've had to play hide-and-seek on the budgeting process, and I've also had to play with policy questions that are so disagreeable to the governor and that he wants to make an action happen that he has every right to do, but we have no other alternative but to be in response to it. So those are the kind of things that you could drive us to a penalty and then and drive us beyond that for other reasons. And so I'll have to look at that. Like I say, it's a balance of power that is a question. And so there's an authority question in there, that how that could be used in that balance. So I'll put some thought into it. But if we actually did solve a consequence of the continual budget cycle, I'm actually open to that discussion.
Well, very good, Senator Coghill. And I think you brought up some good points, too, that sometimes the policy question gets leveraged against the budget, and that delays the budget as well. And I think, and obviously, we all have fishermen and teachers and others who are impacted by the budget who want some certainty that they're going to have a job July 1st. And those pressures weigh on us as well. And fortunately, we've always had the budget done in time before the new fiscal year starts. But as you know, you brought up a good point. We did come back several times in the last couple of years in special sessions that were not budget related and perhaps would or could have been resolved with it during regular session. So. And maybe there should be a penalty for that as well. So, anyway, yeah, there's just a lot of questions here, a lot of concerns, a lot of, like you said, constitutional questions that I think having more time to feel more comfortable with this is good. I do appreciate, though, you bringing this forward, giving us some thought. Certainly the biannual budget has come up several times before, and it's perhaps this is maybe the time is now to look at that, and perhaps we could look at that minus the other items. But yeah, okay, I'll leave it there. Is there anything else the committee would like to discuss? Okay, with that then we will stand adjourned. This was the only item for today. Let's see, our next meeting is Thursday, February 15th, and. And we'll bring up what is it? Constitutional amendment on the spending limit. Okay, that should be another easy topic. So with that, we are adjourned at 4:10.